November 6, 1985, interview number 7 for National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History 2. We are interviewing Saul Weisberg at the United Jewish Federation building at 234 McKee Place. This is Sylvia Busis and Eleanor Mermelstein, by the way, continuing with these interviews. Before we started the tape recorder, we did recapitulate the areas which Saul has discussed with us over the past several months and gave him a chance to think about what other areas he would like to cover in the ensuing interviews. Saul, you did select.
Yeah, I thought that it might be interesting to discuss, not necessarily too briefly, the developments in the community relating to Bichur Cholim. Bichur Cholim is an organization which dates back quite a few decades. I don't remember the exact date of its founding, but historically it derives from the tradition of visiting the sick and was carried out by ladies, and therefore, at least at one time, was a women's organization. As time went on, it did develop a men's auxiliary and a junior auxiliary. At some point, probably in the 40s or early 50s, maybe even earlier, I don't know the exact date, Bichur Cholim decided that it would like to begin to offer institutional services to individuals who might need it. And they did purchase a building, I think originally one on Center Avenue, and then later one on Negley Avenue, on South Negley Avenue, not too far from Penn Avenue. And there they had, if my memory serves me right, maybe 15 or 18 beds. The thrust of Bichur Cholim was supposed to be to give interim or short-term care, but inevitably, and I use that term advisedly, inevitably they found themselves offering long-term or what might be called permanent care to the elderly, and in a rather limited way became a competitor, so to speak. That's not the best term. At least found themselves duplicating on a very small scale the services that were being offered by the Jewish Home and Hospital for the aged. When the Shep study was undertaken, and I have discussed the Shep study in one of these interviews earlier, I think.
In relation to the Montefiore Hospital, you did, yes.
In relation to Montefiore, and I hope in relation to the care of the elderly. Let me just reiterate them in one brief paragraph, the Shep study. When the Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged in 1960 was preparing to undertake a new building program, the Federation asked the home to delay such an expansion until a study was carried out of the need in this community for new or additional services to the elderly and the chronically ill. The Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged agreed, and therefore a joint community-wide committee was appointed with Bernard Halpern, I think, as the chairman to undertake such a study. Dr. Cecil Schiff was asked to be a volunteer consultant. Cecil had just come to Pittsburgh recently to be at the Graduate School of Public Health. Cecil consented, and what turned out to be a very important study was carried out. Some of the organizations that participated in the study were the Home for the Aged, the Montefiore Hospital, the Bush County Children's Service, Federation, of course, itself was a sponsor. And even though Bicker Holum had no connection at that time with Federation, we asked Bicker Holum if it would join in the study, because it was offering services to the elderly or to the chronically ill. And Bicker Holum agreed and was part of the study, both in terms of representation on the committee and in terms of a review of what its services should be. As you may recall, the study recommended consideration of housing for the elderly, certain changes in Jewish Family Children's Service and so forth, and it did recommend that Bicker Holum become a part of the Federation apparatus, so to speak. At least it should become affiliated with or part of the Federation, and that it should particularly devote itself to convalescent short-term care. In other words, the study was saying that there was a need for service for short-term care in the Jewish community, and the Bicker Holum should be the instrument or agent to carry out that care. Bicker Holum agreed with the recommendations of the study and did join the Federation, and for a time was actually a beneficiary.
Do you remember any of the leadership of Bicker Holum?
Yes, I'll go back up 1 second.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Just want to make one comment, which is, it'll become evident, I guess, as I go on, but today the Bicker Holum is still, the Bicker Holum organization is still an affiliate of Federation, but of course not a beneficiary, and of course, as we will talk about, it does not any longer give direct services as it did. At the time, the leadership of Bicker Holum consisted, I guess, primarily of Mr. and Mrs. Kotler, I can't remember the first name for the moment, who, interestingly enough, were the parents, they're both, I guess, dead now, were the parents of Ronald Kotler, who is currently the executive of the Jewish Family and Children's Service. And Ronald today is, I think without any question, the principal person carrying on the Bicker Holum tradition, although there is an organization still of Bicker Holum interested individuals. Mrs. Adler, the Adler Delicatessen, was a very interested party. And there were some other individuals, most of them, if I may put it this way, relatively elderly ladies. But there were some men, not too many, the husbands of these ladies. And then there was a junior auxiliary of women who were relatively active. And the principal person there was probably Evelyn Johann, the wife of Morton Johann, the psychiatrist, if any of you remember. At that time, Evelyn was the principal person. It was agreed that Bicker Holum really ought to move out of the Negley Avenue facility, because it was really not a very good facility, and the only care that was being given there was the care for the elderly on a relatively, I think, primitive basis. It was further agreed that this was not directly stated in the Schiff study, by the way. It was a development after the Schiff study. It was further agreed that an attempt ought to be made to bring Bicker Holum into the Montefiore Hospital, and that some physical arrangements ought to be carried out to enable such a transfer or move to take place. discussions took place with Moniker Hospital officials, and it was agreed that Moniker Hospital would find the space. In the meantime, it was also agreed that Piccolomato make an attempt to bring into its lay body, into its volunteers, some new and different, if I may put it that way, individuals from their ongoing leadership. And I remember today quite vividly visiting, well, calling first Irving Halpern and asking him if he would have lunch with me. Irving was one of the Halpern family who, and Irving had no connection with the Federation whatsoever, which was quite different, of course, from his father, Julius, who had been a longtime supporter of the Federation, and from Bernie, who was extremely active in Federation and so forth. And some of us, certainly I felt that Irving, who was a couple years younger, I guess, than Bernie, ought to be very much a part of Federation, as was Bernie. So it was my thought that this might be an avenue by which we would get Irv involved. And I did have lunch with Irv, and I suggested that he become part of the process by which Vicar Fulham could be moved into the Montefiore, and he agreed. And I don't know if it was immediately or not too long after that, he became president of a new organization, I guess it was really, called the Vicar Fulham Convalescent Home. And Irv became its president. And Vicar Fulham eventually, I don't want to go into a lot of details, but Vicar Fulham eventually did move into the Moniker Hospital in some special space which was set up for it.
Do you know when that was, Paul?
Probably about 1964 would be my guess. Maybe someone earlier. The Chev study was 1960. Mm-hmm. It would seem to me it took 2 or 3 years to do it. Probably between 1962 and 1964 would be my guess, although maybe even earlier. But anyway, it was carried out. It was, as I said, agreed that there would be a space at Montefiore with beds operated by Vicar Fulham, giving short-term convalescent care. It was further agreed that an assistant director at the Montefiore would become the executive of Vicar Fulham. And his name escapes me, I'm sorry to say. But such a, may come back to me, I don't know. Such an individual was indeed appointed. In retrospect, I've often thought that this was a mistake, although I don't know that there was any alternative.
Which but part of it did you think was a mistake, Sean?
The appointment of an individual who was responsible to another executive, the appointment of that individual to become director of a separate organization. The reason I say that is because that's not atypical. In my experience has been that in each of these cases, in a sense, a conflict of interest arises. The individual, in this case, for example, who was responsible to Vicar Fulham, I mean, who was the director of Vicar Fulham, was actually responsible to Irving Goldberg. And it meant that the Montefiore Hospital interests were always primary rather than Vicar Fulham. Now, whether it really made any difference in this instance, I don't know. This kind of arrangement, which, as I said, is not atypical, I think very often does lead to problems, although very often the kind of the arrangement is, I think, unavoidable.
Did this director also have other hospitals?
Yes,
overall
was,
hospital.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I didn't make that clear then. Yes, he maintained what was said to be, but who knows whether or not. Supposed to be half-time on Vicar Fulham and half-time of Montefiore, and Vicar Fulham paid half of his salary and so forth. But he was responsible, really, to the hospital, and which meant that the hospital had priority claims on him. I said, at the moment, I'm really talking from a management standpoint, and without so much directing my attention as to whether this was, in this case, bad or good for Vicar Hallam. An opportunity to make could be called management or philosophical observation. It's an interesting question and one that can be discussed at some length. At the time, there were very high hopes that the government was going to go in for heavy reimbursement for short-term care. And plans were established, therefore, for Vicar Hallam to develop with Montefiore Hospital what was to be an actual wing, so to speak, at the Montefiore. I think it was to be a 50-bed unit. It was designed to be 40 beds, 50 beds. It was designed to be quite large and very handsome, and began to develop architectural proceedings and so forth, and hopes were high that a very important new element in the medical system of the Jewish community was going to come into being, that Vicar Hallam was going to become a very vital part of the Federation and of our Jewish community, and that indeed everybody was going to be happy. However, the government reversed, not too unusually, began to reverse and change some of its directions, and the reimbursement scheme for short-term and convalescent care had changed, and it became apparent that Vicar Hallam could not successfully conduct a major facility inside Montefiore Hospital. It was just not financially feasible. On an operating basis without reference to the capital. I should point out, by the way, that Vicar Hallam did have some capital, as I'll mention later again, although there still would have had to be a fundraising campaign. Ultimately, without going into too much detail, ultimately it was decided that the scheme, as I said, would not work. Relationships deteriorated, as you might expect, because the high hopes had faded, and Vicar Hallam finally moved out of the Montefiore. They wound up when they were a direct service agency at the Angelus Nursing Home in East Liberty, where they continued to give quite a while convalescent care. They were, of course, a facility offering kosher food, and they were able to make that arrangement with Angelus. But that's fairly recent, by the way. I think they were doing that up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Even that began to fail as the new nursing homes came into existence, Whiteman Manor, Negley, and so forth. And the only individuals that used Angelus or Vicar Hallam, really, were individuals with poverty status. And Vicar Hallam finally closed itself out as a direct care facility, and has devoted itself, as you said before, to funding individuals who need help in connection with receiving medical care. They took some of their capital and gave it away. That's why the new wing at the pavilion, let's put that way, at the Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged, called the Vicar Hallam Pavilion, because Vicar Hallam gave the home, I guess, out of his capital. I think it was $250,000.
How did they raise their money, Saul?
Year in and year out, they had some affairs where the proceeds would go to Vicar Hallam. And on top of that, Not a lot of people. It's like with the Home for the Aged and the Jewish Home for Babies. Not a lot of people left money for them in their wills. They had a long tradition. I don't know if you realize it or not, but the Jewish Home for Babies, which has been that's an ongoing institution, out of business for, 30 years now, I think there still is money. There still are bequests to the Jewish Home for Babies by individuals who remember it and who either don't know that it's out of existence or who, in a sense, don't care. The money in the Jewish Home for Babies, which, as I say, has not been an ongoing operation for 30 years now, is being used for Jewish education. I know I'm diverting for the moment, but the Jewish Home for Babies, the leadership finally went to court and got permission to use the capital it had for a purpose other than the original purpose, which was to conduct an orphanage. And the Jewish Home for Babies is now a source of scholarships for Jewish education, support for Jewish education, and our central scholarship program has every once in a while even been able to get a little assistance from the Jewish Home for Babies, our Central Scholarship Federation Central Scholarship Program. Becker Holm, I think, although I'm not really familiar with this anymore, but I think Becker Holm today still cooperates with the Federation in being helpful on occasion. Of course, now that Ron Kotler is head of Jewish Family and Children's Service, executive of the Jewish Family and Children's Service, it's much easier to maintain a relationship. I hope it's much easier to maintain a relationship between Becker Holm and other Federation agencies and to see to it that when it's feasible and practical that the Column funds are used in what might be called a coordinated way. One of the very early large bequests, interestingly enough, the Federation received, by the way, included the money for Becker Holm. It's an interesting story, as a matter of fact, and now included at the moment. I don't know, this may be 20 years ago now. I really don't remember anymore, but one day, an attorney forget his name died not too long ago, and maybe it'll come to me. An attorney who was not particularly well known in the community came in to see me saying that he wanted to get some information about Federation and so forth. I talked to him, etc. Told me there was some money going to be left for Federation, but would not obviously disclose the name of the donor. Not too long after that, we learned that a George Cutler had died and had left something like $300,000, of which $300,000 to the Federation for as a fund. The reason he left to the Federation was an outgrowth of his conversation with me, which had to do with what is the best way to make a charitable donation, so to speak, to the Jewish community to ensure that it would be handled responsibly and so forth. And I thought I was able to convince him to convince his client to leave the money to the Federation. The purposes of the bequest were, or the beneficiaries of the bequest, rather, were Fairford Holland, Jewish Community Center, and I guess Hillel. And that $100,000 or so, which was left for Becker Holm, was to be used for a convalescent care for needy individuals. And the money, as far as I know, may still be in. I've looked at the Federation list recently. There may still be some Kepler money left, but every year, Becker Holm has drawn a certain amount of money from that fund to be used to give or to help individuals receive convalescent care. It was a very remarkable thing because George Cutler had never been active at all in the Jewish community. And it was just quite extraordinary at the time. $300,000 at that time was a very unusual gift, and he himself was an extraordinarily wealthy man. But anyway.
Some of those monies go for scholarships, I believe.
I don't think any of them. I doubt if either the center or well, I may be wrong on this, or Hillel has any of it left. I may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know. Anyway, very sketchily, that was the history of Victor Hollum. When Victor Hollum left Montefiore, as I said, and pulled out, it eventually it ceased being a beneficiary of the Federation. Irving Halpern, of course, ceased being its president. And basically what happened was that the original constituency of Victor Hollum once again took control and operated Victor Hollum in its own way. It was not a really amicable or friendly separation. Victor Hollum felt, and I think with some justice, that the Federation had led them, so to speak, down the primrose path, as the saying is, and then had not been able to deliver what had been promised. Federation, as a matter of Montefiore, was really Federation, was not able to deliver it, but in retrospect, it was not one of the so-called planning endeavors which I look back upon with any sense of real satisfaction. And I think there were some individuals probably within Victor Hollum who were probably bitter at the Federation because of the high hopes and the failure of those high hopes to be fulfilled. Whether there were any alternatives which could have been explored and weren't, whether there were any alternatives which could have actually been achieved, I thought about over the years, and I've never been able to come up with any. It's just one of those instances, I think, where the basic premise, which was that government funding could support this endeavor, that premise proved to be false. And when your basic premise is false, you can never be successful.
Well, it was nobody's fault. It certainly meant
really
well.
I don't really think it was anybody's fault. One thing I will say, and that is that at the time when hopes were high, there were individuals such as Irv who really worked very hard at it. Irv Halpern worked very hard at it. We had other new individuals who came into it. Jerry Levinson was one, and there were others, some of Irv's friends and so forth. And I thought at the time as a way of getting quite a few relatively young men and women, for that matter, involved in an activity which seemed to have the potential of being satisfying, and in the long run of getting those individuals involved in Federation. It did work, by the way, with Irv Halpern, who, as you know, of course, did move on to become very active in Federation, winding up as the chairman of Social Planning and Budgeting, and very much a part of the Federation scheme of things. And I think there were some others, too, although there were, I remember Barry Lorimer was on the board, and there were other young people, too. But it's always unsatisfying to be unable to bring a program or a plan to a successful conclusion. That was one of those where we were not able to do so.
It seems to me that as you've talked over the past month, there have been relatively few failures like that.
Not almost a complete failure, but it was not certainly in any sense a real success. Probably lucky in a sense that Ron Kotler turned out to be so close.
Well,
two more minutes
on this side. If you're finished with Victor Hollum, do you want to be thinking about what other facet you want to be discussing the rest of the interview?
Yeah, well, there were a couple of things that you mentioned which interesting to think about. One might be the relatively short period of the Yom Kippur War. It so happens that when the Yom Kippur War broke out, Gerrit Groker was out of the country. I don't know if you remember that, Sylvia, but Gerrit was out of the country for 3 or 4 days, or whatever it was. And matter of fact, he proved to be unreachable for 2 or 3 days because he was in Portugal or Spain. And so for 3 or 4 days, I acted as the executive. And since there were 3 or 4 very climactic days, some of which I remember very well, might be worthwhile talking about.
Well, I think at the rate we're at the end of the tape, that's a good way to stop this side and not have to interrupt you in the middle of a sentence, and then we'll turn it over.